From Airwolf, Magnum PI, and Saint Elsewhere, Native Voices and Days of Our Lives, this is Jean Bruce Scott congratulating you on your excellent taste for choosing this station and podcast.
Jenny Finch, author, creator of The Drowners and Death of the Elver Man, and general Renaissance woman, your host for the Book of the Month.
This month's book is The Martian Chronicles by Ray Bradbury. The Martian Chronicles is one of Bradbury's most popular and enduring books. First published in 1951, it tells the story of how settlers from Earth reached Mars and what they discovered on our nearest neighbour. In a series of linked stories and short interludes, he takes the reader from the launching of the first interplanetary rockets to the arrival of the last colonists many years later. On the way, we encounter Martians of several types, ancient cities, clashes of ideology, and the very human problems of racism, greed, and stupidity. The book was originally published under the title The Silver Locusts, and this gives a clear idea of Bradbury's approach to our first interstellar adventure. His characters are a mixed bunch, brave and cowardly, clear-sighted and stupid. They carry the weight of their journey throughout the stories, and the excitement of discovery, the wonder of exploring a new world, is infused with a gentle melancholy as the pioneers yearn for the Earth and all the people they left behind. Many of them behave badly, destroying the remains of the Martian cities or carrying old grudges to a new world. Like the Americas, this is not an empty planet when the settlers arrive, though it rapidly becomes one.
"Well," said Captain Wilder. Hathaway gazed out at the distant cities twinkling in the starlight. After swallowing and focusing his eyes, he said, "That city there, Captain, is dead and has been dead a good many thousand years. That applies to those three cities in the hills also. But that fifth city, 200 miles over, sir, what about it?" "People were living in it last week, sir." Spender got to his feet. "Martians," said Hathaway. "Where are they now?" "Dead," said Hathaway. "I went into a house on one street. I thought that it, like the other towns and houses, had been dead for centuries. My God, there were bodies there. It was like walking in a pile of autumn leaves, like sticks and pieces of burnt newspaper, that's all. And fresh. They'd been dead 10 days at the outside." "Did you check other towns? Did you see anything alive?"
"Nothing whatever."
"So I went out to check the other towns. 4 out of 5 have been empty for thousands of years. What happened to the original inhabitants, I haven't the faintest idea. But the fifth city always contained the same thing. Bodies. Thousands of bodies." "What did they die of?" Spender moved forward.
"You won't believe it. What killed them?" Hathaway said simply. "Chicken pox."
"My God, no."
"Yes, I made tests.
Chicken pox. It did things to the Martians it never did to Earthmen. Their metabolism reacted differently, I suppose. Burnt them black and dried them out to brittle flakes. But it's chicken pox, nevertheless. So York and Captain Williams and Captain Black must have got through to Mars. All three expeditions. God knows what happened to them. But we at least know what they unintentionally did to the Martians."
"You saw no other life?"
"Chances are a few of the Martians, if they were smart, escaped to the mountains, but there ain't enough, I'll lay you money, to be a native problem. This planet is through." Spender turned and went to sit at the fire, looking into it.
"Chicken pox. God, chicken pox, think of it.
A race builds itself for 1 million years, refines itself, erects cities like those out there, does everything it can to give itself respect and beauty, and then it dies. Part of it dies slowly, in its own time, before our age, with dignity. But the rest? Does the rest of Mars die of a disease with a fine name, or a terrifying name, or a majestic name?
No, in the name of all that's holy, it has to be chicken pox. A child's disease. A disease that doesn't even kill children on Earth. It's not right and it's not fair. It's like saying the Greeks died of mumps, or the proud Romans died on their beautiful hills of athlete's foot. If only we'd given the Martians time to arrange their death robes, lie down, look fit, and think up some other excuse for dying. It can't be a dirty, silly thing like chicken pox. It doesn't fit the architecture. It doesn't fit this entire world. All right, Hathaway, get yourself some food. Thank you, Captain. And as quickly as that, it was forgotten. The men talked among themselves. Spender did not take his eyes off them. He left his food on his plate under his hands. He felt the land getting colder. The stars drew closer, very clear. When anyone talked too loudly, the captain would reply in a low voice that made them talk quietly from imitation.
Written in the middle of the last century, this book has withstood scientific and technological advances much better than much 20th century science fiction. Possibly this is because Bradbury gives only the sketchiest details of the mechanics of space exploration. His story is told through ordinary people, their thoughts and feelings, rather than grand and imaginary space hardware. They are as much social comment as they are science fiction, and as such, the tales are as true and relevant today as they were when they first appeared.
Father Peregrine started to speak, but the voice hushed him. "We are the old ones," the voice said, and it entered him like a blue gaseous flare and burned in the chambers of his head. "We are the old Martians who left our marble cities and went into the hills, forsaking the material life we had lived. So very long ago we became these things that we are now. Once we were men, with bodies and legs and arms such as yours. The legend has it that one of us, a good man, discovered a way to free man's intellect and soul, to free him of ills and melancholies, of deaths and transfigurations, of ill humours and senilities. And so we took on the look of lightning and blue fire, and have lived in the winds and skies and hills for ever after that, neither prideful nor arrogant, neither rich nor poor, passionate nor cold. We have lived apart from those we left behind, those other men of this world, and how we came to be has been forgotten, the process lost. But we shall never die, nor do harm. We have put away the sins of the body, and live in God's grace. We covet no other property. We have no property. We do not steal, nor kill, nor lust, nor hate. We live in happiness. We cannot reproduce. We do not eat or drink or make war. All the sensualities and childishness and sins of the body were stripped away when our bodies were put aside. We have left sin behind, Father Peregrine, and it is burned like the leaves in the autumn wicker, and it is gone like the soiled snow of an evil winter, and it is gone like the sexual flowers of a red and yellow spring, and it is gone like the panting nights of hottest summer, and our season is temperate, and our clime is rich in thought. Father Peregrine was standing now, for the voice touched him at such a pitch that it almost shook him from his senses. It was an ecstasy and a fire washing through him. "We wish to tell you that we appreciate you building this place for us, but we have no need of it, for each of us is a temple unto himself, and we need no place wherein to cleanse ourselves. Forgive us for not coming to you sooner, but we are separate and apart, and have talked to no one for 10,000 years, nor have we interfered in any way with the life of this planet. It has come into your mind now that we are the lilies of the field. We toil not, neither do we spin. You are right. And so we suggest that you take the parts of this temple into your own cities, and there cleanse them. For, rest assured, we are happy, and at peace. The fathers were on their knees in the vast blue light, and Father Peregrine was down too, and they were weeping, and it did not matter that their time had been wasted, it did not matter to them at all. The blue spheres murmured and began to rise once more on a breath of cold air. May I, cried Father Peregrine, not daring to ask, eyes closed, may I come again, some day, that I may learn from you? The blue fires blazed, the air trembled. Yes, some day he might come again. Some day. And then the fire balloons blew away and were gone, and he was like a child on his knees, tears streaming from his eyes, crying to himself, come back, come back. And at any moment Grandfather might lift him and carry him upstairs to his bedroom in a long-gone Ohio town. They filed down out of the hills at sunset. Looking back, Father Peregrine saw the blue fires burning. No, he thought, we couldn't build a church for the likes of you. Your beauty itself. What church could compete with the fireworks of the pure soul?
Ray Bradbury was one of the genre's most prolific writers, producing more than 500 books, stories, and screenplays up to his death in 2012. Many of his novels, including The Martian Chronicles, are composed of linked short stories, making them both easy to read and quite compulsive. There are numerous other Martian stories in some of his other books, all of which add to the depth and richness of his vision. Though Bradbury tackled many contemporary issues in his time, and wrote one of the best vampire series I've ever read in From the Dust Returned, the colonization of Mars held a special fascination for him, and he returned to the Red Planet throughout his career. If you are new to his work, this is the perfect place to begin. If you are already familiar with his magical storytelling, this book will reawaken your sense of wonder and send you back to many old favorites.
Here are some handy tips and information regarding your hospital bedside TV, radio, and phone service. TV channels 1 to 5 are free to use at certain times every day, so check your screen for details. To help you keep in touch with friends and loved ones, outgoing calls are also free all day, every day, to landline numbers that begin with 01, 02 or 03. Radio channels can be listened to absolutely free at any time of day. If you would like to access a paid service, such as our wide range of TV channels, Sky Sports, our great range of films, or just need a little internet access, then you'll need to buy a bundle. If you just need access to basic TV services, including channels 1 to 5, prices start from as little as £1.50 per day. If you are after a broader range of content, then prices start from just £2.50 per day. Terms and conditions apply. To find out more about bedside entertainment services and find a bundle to suit your needs, just pick up the bedside phone and speak to the friendly Hospedia customer care team. They'll help you find the best deal. And remember, to contact Hospital Radio, just pick up the phone and dial star 800.
Offering prestigious accommodation, ensuite facilities and high-quality care for residents provided 24/7 by qualified nurses and carers, Roseville Care Centre provides the perfect home for its residents' emotional, spiritual, social, physical and intellectual needs. a purpose-built residential care facility in the heart of Ingleby Barwick. Roseville is a care centre which provides facilities to accommodate elderly residential and nursing service users, offering both short and long stay accommodation, as well as respite and daycare. To find out more, please telephone 01642 308188 88 or visit our website, rosevillecarecentre.com. Roseville Care Centre. Care.
In today's crowded world, it's sometimes hard to get heard. And sometimes you need a little extra push to be heard. That's where Manila PR can help. We specialise in online radio and press for independent bands, with prices to match, and have been doing so for the last decade. So if you have a noise to make, make it with Manila. Visit manilapr.com now.
Parkville is a purpose-built residential and nursing care centre situated at the heart of Middlesbrough, providing personalised care in a modern and homely environment. Parkville aims to help older people to continue to live independent and active lives within the wider community whilst benefiting from the care and support of an experienced and dedicated team of nursing and care staff. At Parkville, we provide facilities to accommodate residential, nursing and dementia service users. To find out more, please telephone 01642 22 33 34. That's 01642 22 33 34. Parkville Care Centre. Care to call us home.
From Airwolf, Magnum PI and St. Elsewhere, Native Voices and Days of Our Lives, this is Jean Bruce Scott congratulating you on your excellent taste for choosing this station and podcast.
I use the phrase lyrical purveyor of wonder to actually describe this particular podcast with Ray Bradbury. And of course, Jenny, you could actually have that title as well, lyrical purveyor of wonder, which that was quite nice. We have, of course, in the studio, Rob Nichols, and good to have you back on Book of the Month, Rob, because obviously you're a regular coordinator, once again, challenging finding the text and so on. The Martian Chronicles, I physically put through your letterbox.
You did.
In like a kind of little exploration sort of way that sort of suddenly emerged. And what did you make of it?
I really enjoyed it. It's interesting to read science fiction from the past, Back to the Future, how you put it. And initially when I'm reading the first couple of chapters, you're thinking one thing strikes you is the whole concept of astronauts didn't exist when he wrote that. The fact that these people almost that go to Mars are almost like they could be off a Wild West film or some sort of gangster film or something. They're just people, aren't they? Mm. They're not professionally trained in any way, in any aspect. But it's an incredible sort of tale of humanity and which is the civilization and as Jenny said, bringing all it, trying to escape Earth. But bringing all the foibles and everything from Earth to a new planet, and it's very much like the colonization, as Jenny said, of the empty Americas, which weren't empty.
No, indeed. I mean, the Native Americans, as indeed we heard Jean Bruce Scott, who identified this particular show and program, and he works very closely with Randy Reinhardt as the co-founder of Native Voices at the Autry. Mm. But you're absolutely right. I thought that the quality of Bradbury's writing is quite phenomenal. It's clearly of its time, because that's one of the things about science fiction, whether you pick up an H.G. Wells text from the 1890s or a example of sort of Hugo Gernsback's pulp fiction authors and so on, you're clearly going to reference that. And even now, we look back at 2001 A Space Odyssey. Doesn't 2001 seem such a long time ago now? We still haven't made it past March. I suppose Man Spacecraft have gone there. I thought it was very poetic. extremely poetic in terms of the approach that was made there. And I was very surprised. I mean, this is about the third or fourth time I've actually read it. The first time was shortly after the TV series, which was probably one of the period where it shifted from the title of being The Silver Locusts, which again is interesting in terms of that notion of the silver spaceships and that poetical notion of spaceships landing and effectively like a plague of locusts, effectively leaving nothing behind them. TV series, which was, I think, criticised at the time in the 1970s, featured Rock Hudson, but a lot of the speeches that come out of that are word for word that they were used. It was a very faithful adaptation. I don't know, Jenny, if you remember the television adaptation, but...
Barely.
Yeah. Well, it's available on DVD for a remarkably low price. But it did actually sort of address... Sorry, that's a little shameless plug there. I don't know what we're doing in this stage. But it addressed that whole system. And I thought that Barry Morse, who was also one of the characters also brought to that, we mentioned that Roddy McDowall portrayed Father Peregrine. Clearly, there were a couple of issues that you possibly might say were interesting. I heard Leonard Nimoy, the late Leonard Nimoy, do a wonderful reading of the only part of the Martian Chronicles which is actually set on Earth, which talks about the house that effectively is an automatic house, which you could say is actually highly prescient, because even now, when we actually can control our heating in certain instances and various other factors, that fully automated intelligent house, which after the nuclear war still effectively keeps going, in the description of the people who are, all we see are the images of where they've been blasted against the side there, which obviously comes in the post-Hiroshima Nagasaki sort of experience. You have this notion of it's the dog, the intrusion of the dog into the house that effectively sort of sets off a chain of systems that leads to the house burning down, and that constantly work through that. But other than that, there's also another piece which I know folk might have difficulty with, and I think it's fair to say that it was of its time, and that's the period where we actually have the description of the Negro Americans who are looking to leave, and clearly they're not necessarily owners, but people who are actually in the South are reluctant to let them go. One person in particular. And there is the use of the N-word, which, again... I almost did a double take, because when you see that, you think, whoa, it's a... But we shouldn't censor it, because that would be totally against what Ray Bradbury is actually about. Because, again, he was somebody who was writing very much as a passionate believer in books. And as he demonstrated in Fahrenheit 451, clearly, you know, that was the area. I mean, Jenny, when you read that sort of particular text, were the parts which sort of think,
Yeah, that particular story, I remember reading The Martian Chronicles when I was very young. I was
when
about was 10 or 11.
Locusts.
When it was The Silver Locusts. And... I read that story and found it particularly poignant, and I didn't understand the reference to what are you going to do nights. And it wasn't until I went back when I was much older that I suddenly realised what he meant. And it hit me very hard then. I thought, my goodness. I thought it was an immensely powerful story. And actually, I think whilst you wouldn't use the N-word nowadays, you could almost justify it, because it polarises the attitudes of people then, and it makes it so obvious what's happening.
Yeah. And obviously we've heard a lot about churches being burnt down this year, an awful lot of churches burned down in the South, and shootings, horrendous things. So it's quite good to revisit that and maybe use the language. It's more shocking that language is used, but that it sums up the opinions in that part of the United States still all that time after.
There is a resonance that I think all good literature and all great literature actually has brought to the fore. Another, I think my favourite story is the encounter with the Martian from the future or the past, or the Earthman from the past or the future. They're never quite sure.
Yeah.
And there's that line, "Gods, you're a ghost." "No, you're a ghost." "No, I'm a ghost." And it's quite an interesting take on the way in which they kind of, relate to each other. Because at that stage of the book, obviously, we're told there aren't any Martians. We heard, they kind of might have, in some instances, left their bodies behind. They died of chicken pox and so on. We have that still on Earth, of course, today. We don't quite know. I mean, we have to speculate what happened to a lot of civilizations that were there. That kind of circular turning of the wheel, really. How does it compare to contemporary literature, such as The Martian, of course, which is very popular this year and actually sort of done that? Do you think this, we're still ultimately even in The Martian, what Ridley Scott, what Andy Weir, of course, you know, it's his opening novel, what he's done with The Martian is to really channel an awful lot of what Bradbury actually did. I mean, he has, although, you know, clearly we now look, we now have an idea in terms of what Mars looks like, but even now, there's still parts of us which are saying, well, maybe there is a sort of connection within that.
I think so. I think the language of this is so beautiful, as you say, Rob. It's almost like poetry. And all of Bradbury's work is written in that lovely lyrical style, which you obviously don't get in, particularly in a contemporary film. I thought, in a lot of ways, the basic concept of The Martian could have been lifted from Bradbury's Martian stories, in that, at the end, that's what the Earth people become. They become the Martians. And there's that sense of belonging and that struggle as well, which I find, resonates a lot.
And it is an interesting thing, because returning back to the televisual adaptation, yes, the final sequence where actually Colonel Wilder and his family look into the water and they say, look there, we are the Martians.
Yes.
And that kind of interconnect together, which, who knows, we may well have been. Or maybe again. So, marks out of 10, Rob Nichols.
9 out of 10.
Jenny Finch.
9.5 out of 10, only because my favourite story, Dark They Were and Golden-Eyed, isn't in this collection.
Mm. I'm going to go 10 out of 10. I think I'm going to, it's a 10 from me, because I really did think it, yes, it's rare, but genuinely sort of find the humanity that comes across in every sense of the word, and the way he manages to develop that really, really positive, including, as I say, there are so many we could go through each story individually, but the tale of the man who actually looks for the wife and doesn't quite get the wife he's actually expecting.
Yeah. That's so funny.
Yes.
Bernadette Peters actually took on board the role of the female in the thing for that, which is nicely put together. So what's next then, Jenny Finch?
Well, I thought we'd have a festive tale, and then I thought, maybe we'll have too much in the way of festive tales. So this time we're going to have John Grisham's Skipping Christmas.
Jenny Finch, author, creator of The Drowners and Death of the Elver Man, and general Renaissance woman, your host for the Book of the Month.